I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Tomorrow, in a country where 40 million will not have enough to eat without federal assistance, a continuing political circus showcases Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. They'll be debating war and peace on a TV station, ABC, owned by the creators of Mickey Mouse. Both candidates are paid by those committed to ongoing genocide here in the Middle East. But could a second Trump term avert the end of the world if he terminated the US proxy war on Russia through Ukraine? This as the vassal states of Western Europe lie in economic ruin, resulting from multi-billion dollar suicidal backing of the US military-industrial complex designs in Ukraine. The electoral consequences of the obedience of puppets has catalyzed victories for anti-war parties in France and Germany. Joining me now from Basel in Switzerland is Dr. Daniel Ganser, founder and director of the Swiss Institute for Peace and Energy Research. His latest book is USA, The Ruthless Empire, following on from his seminal history, NATO's Secret Armies, Operation Gladio and Terrorism in Western Europe. Thanks so much, Dr. Ganser, for coming on the show. You know, before I even start, before we get to the Trump debate and the decline of Western Europe, I'm going to have to ask you, because viewers will wonder if they bother to use Wikipedia, a suspicious site in its own right. I have to keep re-editing my entry. Why does Wikipedia call you a conspiracy theorist if anyone's watching and quickly looking up Dr. Daniel Ganser?
Because I question 9/11. You know, I say we were not told the truth about the terrorist attack of 9/11. And I say World Trade Center 7 was blown up by controlled demolition. It was not hit by a plane. And ever since I've said that, my Wikipedia entry has just gone from bad to worse. And I don't edit it anymore. It's beyond my control.
Yeah, you know, I don't know whether it's just 9/11. Wednesday, of course, is the 23rd anniversary. I don't know whether it's just that. I think it's everything you're writing sounds like a conspiracy, doesn't it? Because clear from your book, NATO's Secret Armies, that any military-industrial complex systems under Trump or Harris will continue to prevent Western Europe since Operation Gladio and before to be democratic. That's what a lot of people are suspecting. Just remind us about Operation Gladio, because it's not, your book is not on the school curriculum of Western European countries.
It's not.
And I think arguably it should be.
That's my book.
People may be shocked who don't know about it. What is Operation Gladio, by the way? It's relevant today.
Yeah, I mean, I can take it step by step. This is my PhD. I wrote 4 years on that book. And NATO, obviously, is the greatest military alliance in terms of size. It's 32 countries right now. During the Cold War, it was much less. It was 18 countries. And NATO always said, you know, we just prepare for a Soviet invasion, which never came during the Cold War. And then secretly, the CIA and MI6 set up stay-behind armies in different countries of Western Europe. And in Italy, this secret army was called Gladio. And it was exposed in the year 1990. That was the year when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. And some people have paid attention to it, but most people have not noticed it. And what really came to light was a scandal, because NATO had to confirm that they operated secret stay-behind armies in many countries of Western Europe. And you actually can't do that. You know, you can't have a secret army in a democracy. It's just illegal. The parliament must always know who's in the army, how big is the army, what's the weapon supply.
And to be clear, these are not the secret armies. They're not the armies today in Ramstein, the tens of thousands of US soldiers in Germany, or the people on all the bases occupying Great Britain. This is something else. This is using terrorism.
That's something else. Yeah. These secret armies were located in Italy, in France, in Germany. They even had former right-wing extremists who had served under Hitler, who were then integrated in German secret armies, and they were not officially known. And in Italy, the Italian ambassador to NATO had to confirm that in some terrorist attacks, the arms caches of the secret armies were used. So these secret armies were officially linked to terrorism. And the terrorist attacks, you know, there we come into conspiracies. I mean, conspiracies exist. They basically are, you know, an agreement between two or more people to carry out some, you know, sinister act without telling anybody else. And everybody who's been into political analysis for some time knows that, you know, ever since the murder of Caesar, Julius Caesar, there have been conspiracies. And Gladio was a big conspiracy. And the NATO still today doesn't want to talk about it. But, you know, I'm 100% positive that it existed. So NATO secret armies existed. They were set up by CIA and MI6, and they were linked to terrorism.
In fairness, I think the CIA does admit it today. But I suppose the relevance here is, do you think that that created the fertile ground in which to make Western European countries today believe that they're fighting for justice when they support the Azov Battalion in Ukraine against Russia? The chapter headings in your book, the UK, Italy, France, Spain, Portugal, Belgium, Luxembourg, Denmark, Norway, Greece and Germany, all their democracies were subverted by Operation Gladio and MI6 and CIA. So all those countries, obviously notable for supporting Zelensky.
I mean, in all fairness, it has to be said that most people in Western Europe have no clue about this. And most people in the United States, if you ask them what is Gladio, they've never heard about it. So it really is only highly specialized people in history and political science and some courageous journalists who know about Operation Gladio. And people on the streets today, if you ask them about Ukraine, it's the same problem. I mean, people think the war in Ukraine started in 22 with the invasion of Russia's invasion into Ukraine. And I always tell them, you know, in 2014, there were snipers on the Maidan, which is the important space in Kiev, where protesters met with, policemen. And I tell them, look at the 20th of February, 2014, and you will see that snipers killed both demonstrator and policemen. And that's called strategy of tension. And I've seen things like that in my research on Operation Gladio. So you can always create havoc, you can always create chaos by killing both sides and then withdrawing very quickly. But there again, I realized in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, where I give a lot of public talks and, you know, I'm connected to people here, I'm based in Switzerland. People go like, oh no, I can't, I've never heard that, I don't think that. And are you sure 2014 it already started? And it's just not in the news. And when it's not in the news, people think it doesn't exist.
And of course, it's banned that kind of information explicitly by the European Commission and in Britain by censorship authorities. You had endorsed RFK Jr., whose family certainly knows enough about conspiracies. We've already had candidate Trump shot in the head in a assassination attempt. All assassination attempts are suspicious, of course, but this was also suspicious. I mean, do you think, given RFK Jr. has said similar things to what you just said about the real causes for the war in Western Europe that may have killed hundreds of thousands of people in Ukraine, do you think those same MI6 and CIA forces are on standby in case Trump wins in November?
Could be. I mean, he was shot in the ear, and I don't believe that the Secret Service was not aware of that person, you know, that person who was shooting up there on the roof. You don't actually have a situation like that where you go like, ah, yeah, gee, there was a man on the roof with a gun, but we were just too busy with other projects, so we couldn't check that. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So it really was a stand down order. And Robert Kennedy Jr., yes, true. I would have voted for him had I been, you know, American. I'm obviously Swiss, and I will not vote for anybody in the U.S. election. But Robert Kennedy Jr. Has a very deep understanding of international politics, given the fact that his father was killed. He knows that conspiracies exist, and his uncle, President John F. Kennedy, was killed. And Robert Kennedy Jr. knows that the U.S. was involved in the overthrow of the Ukrainian government in 2014. There are other people in the U.S., like John Mersheimer, excellent man. He knows very well that the U.S. actually was involved in the 2014 coup d'etat with Victoria Nuland playing a key role. Also, Jeffrey Sachs, another excellent man in the United States.
You're telling us all those people have been on Going Underground in recent weeks, but then...
Good people.
But that does suggest that if those same Gladio forces, decades on, are still there, powerful enough as I said, we don't know about the assassination attempt on Trump. It's not even covered in the so-called legacy mainstream media. It's all forgotten now since Harris suddenly became the candidate. I mean, actually on that, doesn't it surprise you that, you know, why it is that no one learns from history? That we've been through Zapruder and Kennedy and John F. Kennedy and all of that, and yet something happens only a month or so ago, and it's managed to be quietened down already. There's obviously no Warren Commission or anything like that, but we're going through it again.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, they try to bury information that is inconvenient, because if you go through the data on the Trump assassination attempt, then I think the first thing that is clear is that he has been really shot in the ear, and it was really close. I mean, the ear is very close, and, you know, he could have died on that day. He didn't. And then the second thing is that there was a shooter, and the third thing is that the shooter was taken down by snipers. And the question then obviously comes to everybody who goes, like, how come this guy could climb on that roof, sit there and shoot at Trump? How come the Secret Service did not stop him from doing that? Because that's the job of the Secret Service. And the thing is that you always have a command post. So if somebody sees something, you know, the information would go to the command post, and the command post would then react and say, okay, there's a shooter on roof, and they would say where the shooter is, and they would react. They would not say, well, we're not sure whether that gun has already been loaded. Let's wait a second, or let's leave Trump make this very important point in his speech. No, you would immediately, you know, take down the president and say there's an armed man on the roof. And you would just take the president down and guide him to a secure location. All of this didn't happen. So that, for me, looks like a stand down, which means an explicit order within the corrupt Secret Service not to protect the president on that day. And, you know, I don't have the facts. I just look at what happened and I say, there's something very wrong happening in the United States right now.
I mean, Gladio was so strategic. It successfully destroyed mass movements, political parties of millions of people in Western Europe after the victory against Nazism. It was successful. It was strategic. It destroyed, it constructed fake left-wing terror organizations and all the rest of it. Does this kind of thing show the desperation, the assassination attempt on Trump, banning of media in a country with the First Amendment, the banning of media in Western Europe? Signs of desperation. There's nothing as strategic and as clever as we saw under the great, or some would say evil, leadership of the heads of CIA and the security services in the 50s and 70s.
What I really see within NATO countries, you know, within the 32 countries, they're led by the United States. I see a certain degree of decay that is becoming worse and worse. I mean, you know, we obviously had in the 50s, we had the overthrow of the government in Iran in 53 of Mossadegh. That was a CIA and MI6 operation. We had in 54, we had the overthrow of the government in Guatemala of Arbenz, who was the elected president of Guatemala. We obviously had crimes in Vietnam, countless crimes. People were killed and tortured. We had the overthrow of the government in Chile in 73. So, you know, there's a long legacy of operations, the Bay of Pigs invasion, attack on Cuba in 1961, the attempt to kill Fidel Castro, which went wrong. They couldn't kill him. So, you know, there have been many, many crimes. But now I think people, given that we have YouTube, given that we have Instagram, given that we have Telegram, given that we have, you know, all sorts of communication, people try to find out about these things. People try to talk about it. So the information war is going on. And what I think is very interesting, that people now talk about what was the Kursk offensive, you know, on August 6th. Was this just Zelensky invading Russia, or was this the United States?
I'll just have to stop you, Dr. Daniel Ganser. There's rumble as well. I'll just stop you there. We have to go to a break. More from the founder and director of the Swiss Institute for Peace and Energy Research after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and director of the Swiss Institute for Peace and Energy Research, Dr. Daniel Ganser. I interrupted you, Dr. Ganser, in part one when you were talking about Kursk, which is the most recent offensive by Zelensky's British EU-US armed forces, applauded in the propaganda media of Western Europe and NATO countries.
Yeah, we took a short break. But coming back to that point, you know, on Rumble and Instagram, Telegram and other channels, it's obviously a very heated debate. what was going on before this invasion really started. If it was just a decision by President Zelensky, then it was a purely Ukrainian operation. But it could also be that the British and the Americans, so NATO countries, used Zelensky to attack Russia. And that, you know, during the Cold War, it would be, you know, unthinkable that NATO attacks the USSR, because it's a nuclear power, and the US is a nuclear power, and the rule has always been nuclear power should not shoot each other, kill its soldiers, and have invasions on their territory. So there's really a new quality there, or a new drama there unfolding. And
or is it a bit like the proxy armies in Afghanistan, when the United States supported the those who would become those who launched the 9/11 attacks, as the mainstream narrative would have it? You know, this has been done before, so Putin doesn't have to respond as immediately as you might suggest from what you just said as regarding it being unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have the facts. You know, I don't even know whether this was purely Zelensky or whether this was Biden through Zelensky. I mean, I mean, if we see that Biden even confuses the names of Zelensky and Putin at the last NATO summit, he wanted to introduce Zelensky and then he said, "This is Putin." I mean, United States is a very confused situation. But what is Jack Sullivan, for instance, doing, and Anthony Blinken? So the Kursk offensive is something that is being debated heavily. And you're right. We can draw the conclusion that it's somewhat similar to Afghanistan in 79, because the CIA set up, you know, radical Muslims in Afghanistan in 79, already in summer. And then in winter, in December 79, this drew the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, which was illegal. But it was again triggered by the CIA, who armed the Mujahideens. And the Mujahideens later turned into Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. So, yes, the CIA is using all sorts of proxies. And Ukrainians are a proxy used for U.S. imperialism.
Because what's really different here is where you're talking to me from, Switzerland. Because even in the Second World War, I mean, anyone who's read Primo Levi's books and his fleeing Nazi Germany as a Jew to freedom in Switzerland, we had a former Ukraine NATO official and Swiss Colonel Jack Bode on this program. And I tried to ask him, expressed his frustration. What do you think? You're talking to me from Basel. Switzerland is no longer a neutral country, clearly. It hosts conferences on peace without all the parties. What do you think of it abandoning its historic neutrality? And what does the Swiss people think about the fact that Switzerland is a de facto, you know, I mean, if not military, certainly geopolitical target now of the global south, the BRICS, the emerging world that is upon us?
I mean, I'm just very sad to see this. I mean, we had this conference in Switzerland. It was called a peace conference, and they only invited Ukrainians. They didn't invite the Russians. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, it's, what could I say? It's just very sad. It's very sad, and it's obviously wrong. And on the neutrality issue, you know, Switzerland has a population of 8 million people, so we're a small country, but we had no say in this. I mean, the Swiss government, on October 24th, 2022, that was the day the Russian invaded Ukraine, said, okay, we'll stay neutral and we'll see that we can talk to all sides. And then only 4 days later, Swiss Foreign Minister Ignazio Cassis said, okay, we're taking over all sanctions of the European Union. So we actually go into an economic war against Russia. And that's the day Switzerland left neutrality. It was the 28th of February, 2022. And I think it was a huge mistake, because Switzerland is not a member of the European Union. And these were not sanctions which were, you know, being supported by the Security Council in New York, by United Nations. So Switzerland had no reason to do this. And I talked to friends and said, oh, why? We shouldn't do that. We should stay neutral. And they said, yeah, but this is an illegal invasion. Then I said, well, when the Americans invaded Iraq, that was also an illegal invasion. We didn't start an economic war against the US, you know. Or when Germany bombed Serbia in 1999, that was illegal as well. We didn't, you know, start an economic war against Germany. In fact, neutrality is an idea that you can't start an economic war against people who do illegal things. You just stay neutral. You say, okay, the CIA overthrew the government in Kiev, that was illegal. The Russians invaded in 22, that was illegal. We stay neutral. And so I think it's a huge mistake. But what we will have is we will have a vote on that issue. I'm not sure whether you're aware of that, but we can have we can force a vote. It's called an initiative. You collect 100,000 signatures. People did that. I support that. And we're going to have a vote on whether that Switzerland goes back to being neutral. I don't know when the vote will be. It will probably be in 2025.
Be too late then, arguably. But, unlike Gladio and the previous CIA MI6 operations, what was behind in the first place this abandoning of neutrality? Is it actually a product of elite class warfare in Western Europe? The elites in Switzerland are out of touch with the Swiss population. Similarly, Macron out of touch with the French population. Scholz, I mean, clearly the polls show all these leaders, Starmer in Britain, they're all completely out of touch with their populations.
I think so, yeah. I think many members of the executive are not in touch with what their populations really think. I mean, if you look at Germany, Germany has 16 states or Bundesländer, as you call them, and two Bundesländer, which is Thüringen and Sachsen, they just had an election a few days ago. And the point is that none of the ruling parties, I mean, the Green Party is ruling in Germany, the Social Democrats, the Red Party is ruling, and FDP, which is the third small party, they're ruling in Berlin. And none of these three parties, which represent the German government right now, were making any good results. In fact, they were all shattered. And the AfD and the BSW, das Bündnis Sahra Wagenknecht, made a lot of points. And it's still, you know, a point being discussed in Germany, but it very much supports your analysis that actually people don't trust the ruling parties anymore. And in Switzerland, people have different perspectives, but many people, I still think the majority wants Switzerland to stay neutral. And they don't like the Swiss government to throw neutrality away in the context of the Ukrainian war.
Yeah, I mean, what next then? I mean, you mentioned Germany. We've had Sahra Wagenknecht officials from the European Parliament on. I mean, even the Japanese FT here saying Volkswagen considering closing factories in Germany for the first time in its 87-year history. What happens for those powerful elite classes as the economies of Western Europe collapse on the altar of this war, a proxy war against Russia through Ukraine? How will they be able to control the anger in the streets?
It will be very difficult. I mean, if you look at the situation of Germany right now, it's a country with 80 million people. Berlin, obviously the capital, but they had the Nord Stream pipeline blown up, and that was a very important supply of gas coming from Russia, going into Germany and giving Germany cheap energy. And now it was blown up on the 26th of September 2022. Most people remember that one. Now there are two stories circulating. One story by Seymour Hersh, which I think is the correct story, is Joe Biden, US President Joe Biden, gave the order and the CIA carried it out. So that's the official, that's the story I believe in. And Germany didn't react. It was like, oops, the United States just carried out a terrorist attack against Germany, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said nothing. He just said nothing. And the other story, which is now being circulated by the Wall Street Journal, which I don't believe that story, but it has circulated in August 2024, and the story was, no, the Ukrainians did it. So Zelensky did it, and Solyushny, his chief of staff, and the CIA is giving a completely new role in this Wall Street story. And the role of the CIA then is, it warned Zelensky not to do it. So it was like, don't do it, it's not a good idea. But Zelensky carried it out. So the shift is, the blame is being shifted from Joe Biden to Zelensky. But if you look at these stories, everybody, I say, in the end has to make up their own mind. But Germany continues to send weapons to Zelensky. So it's like, do you think he blew up your pipeline? And then if yes, why do you send weapons? Or do you think the Americans blew up the pipeline? Then why don't you criticize Joe Biden? So it's really It's very strange, you know. Germany is not daring to say anything.
And of course, Harris, Kamala Harris, was in that administration up to the Murdoch Wall Street Journal readers to decide. Arguably, people can watch our interview with Cy Hirsch about that. Just finally, you have talked about the tragedy of Ukraine. Obviously, hundreds of millions of people in Western Europe will pay the price for this in terms of poverty, but they've paid with their lives in Ukraine. And you compared it to after the aftermath of the Vietnam War, the aftermath of other US proxy wars, when everyone wakes up from the nightmare.
Yeah, because in Vietnam, if I just may, you know, that's also in my book, Ruthless Empire, the Vietnam story. I mean, it was the South Vietnamese killing the North Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese killing the South Vietnamese. In the end, there were 3 million Vietnamese dead and another 58,000 US soldiers who were also there. And the story was that the United States sided with the South Vietnamese and bombed the North Vietnamese. And when they left in 1975, the US left and the Vietnamese sort of woke up and said, why were we killing each other? This is crazy. You're my brother. And I hope that Ukrainians and Russians will come to the same point. At one point, you know, the British and the Americans will withdraw their weapons, they will withdraw their financial support, and they will withdraw their advisors, military advisors. And at that point, Ukrainians will realize and Russians will realize that they're still neighbors. They will always be neighbors. It's not, you know, Ukraine is not going to be a neighbor of Brazil and Russia is not going to be a neighbor, I don't know, of Australia. So they're stuck from their geographical situation. They're stuck. That was the same for North and South Vietnamese. They were, you know, they were still there when the Americans left. And I hope that people in Ukraine and people in Russia understand this, that they're both brothers and that they, at one certain point, must find a way back to peace.
Dr. Daniel Ganser, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US-EU armed genocide here in West Asia. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.